characteristics of pure devotional service, or the general character of bhakti. So in this first section it explains there are six characteristics of devotional service. Devotional service is Prabhupada's way of speaking about bhakti. Bhakti means devotion. Serving Krishna with love, devotional service. Acting in love for the pleasure of Krishna in a favorable mood. Free from jnana, karma and all the rituals and Vedic dharmas. So in this discussion, in the beginning there's a whole discussion about sin, different types of sin. Apravada, Paravada, Kutam and Bijan. And we've just written that here in our notes, kind of summarized it. What the first four or five pages of this chapter discuss. The basic idea is that there's different stages of sin we're experiencing. The fruits we're directly experiencing, there's some that's waiting to present itself in the future. Or some sins are lying as seed, a stock of sins within our heart from our previous wrong activities, previous life, in this life. So, in order to describe the glories of bhakti, Rupa Goswami explains how the devotional service destroys. It's one of the things it does by practicing bhakti. These sins get destroyed from the heart, and so we don't feel sins cause us suffering. If we have sickness or fever or pain or difficulty, it's due to our sins. A sinless person doesn't have any difficulty, doesn't have any suffering other than old age and death. Everybody gets old, everybody dies. But you see some people, they're all the time sick. And I have a chokidar who's also a laborer. And so he comes here every night and stays from 7:30 until sunrise. And every few days, oh, I have this sickness and I took this injection and this medicine. And I'm thinking, wow, this is... I get sick time to time, every so many months or once a year, twice a year or something. And I think, oh, this is, I'm losing my time for Krishna service, being sick for a few days. And then there are other people that I never see them sick, not even in a whole year's time. But always quite healthy. I know some people like that, some Indian people. So there are all these different levels. And then I meet this worker who's like every 3 days or something, this sickness, that sickness, at least in a month's time. So this is... caused by our karmas, our previous bad karmas. We get blessing, we get punishment, we get reward. So this characteristics of bhakti, as we go further in bhakti, become more advanced in devotional service, we go through a level of sadhana bhakti, then there's bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. So these six characteristics manifest at different levels at different times. So throughout this presentation here about bhakti, Rupa Goswami cites different verses to support his points. So the first thing is he cites Kapila Shiksha, third canto, chapter 29, verses 12 and 13. He wants to prove how a pure devotee never aspires selfishly, even for five types of liberation. And by citing this, Rupa Goswami is establishing that Uttama Bhakti far transcends any form of moksha. Usually people are engaged in some type of religious pursuits to attain happiness in this world and fulfillment and prosperity in this world. People want to be, of course, successful. And they turn to God and pray to God and worship God for that end. But moreover, sensible people understand that after death there's life after death, that life continues, and they want to ensure that they'll be happy in the future, so they also worship God for that future happiness. And ultimately an intelligent person will desire for the ultimate happiness of liberation, wherein he doesn't have to come back to this material world of samsara and undergo the sufferings of janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, old age, disease and death. So these are the four aspects of Vedic culture, dharma, artha, karma, moksha. We worship God, and then we get the desirable things we want. Then we enjoy in this world. We enjoy our body and senses. That's called karma. And then when we're a little bit enlightened and we realize, well, there's higher worlds where people never have to take birth, where they can enjoy eternally in relationship with Krishna and Vishnu and his eternal service. So let me try for liberation. Salokya Mukti, Sarupya Mukti, Shashti Mukti, Samipya Mukti. Or if one is in Nirvishesh body who wants Brahma Sayuja Mukti merging into the oneness. At any rate, this is a higher aspiration than just sense gratification in this world. But the Rupa Goswami is explaining that devotees, we engage in dharma, sanatan dharma, the ultimate dharma of worshipping Krishna, sarva-dharman pratyajama mekam sharanam braja. We abandon all other kinds of dharmas and all, because they're all tinged with material desire. And we try to manifest the pure desire to love Krishna for his pleasure and satisfy Krishna for his happiness without any selfish rejection or demands. So that type of approach to dharma is actually the perfection of pure dharma. It's called Jiva Dharma. And that type of religious practice, the living entity doesn't even want it. He doesn't want anything for himself, including moksha. Janmai shrei bhavati bhakti rahaiti kritai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I don't want anything. I don't want anything of this world or anything of that world or anything of the spiritual world. I don't want anything on heaven, on earth, or in the spiritual world. Madanam, Madanam Sundarim, Kavitam Bhadi Vidishakami, Mama Janmai Janmaneshwari, Bhavatan Bhakti Raita Kidari. Even if I had to take birth after birth, no problem. As long as I can serve you and please you, then that's my only desire. So this is the perfection of dharma. This is the purest expression of dharma, where one is completely free from all selfish motive and desire. So that's what Rupa Goswami is explaining here. Because Kapila, in his Kapila Shikshi, tells his mother, those who are pure devotees have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation, karma, jnana. Their minds are so much engaged in serving Krishna that they're never interested in asking for anything except to be engaged in that service. They don't even beg to live in my abode. So in this first chapter, Rupa Goswami is citing the evidence of Kapila Muni telling his mother the nature of the pure devotees. They don't care that bhakti, uttam bhakti or pure bhakti transcends any form of moksha. Bhakti is the supreme end of bhakti. Bhakti takes one beyond moksha. This is an interesting point Manacharya is making. That bhakti takes one beyond moksha and gives prema, which is the highest end of bhakti. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that. This is a pancha purushartha. The purushartha, artha means desirable goal or end, and purusha means man or mankind. Purushartha. So pancha purushartha, usually there's char purushartha, what it's called. There's four things where there's dharma, artha, kama, moksha. That's a term for that. These four desirable things, he says, panchama purushartha. He said the fifth goal of life. These are the four goals of life. One goal is to engage in dharma. And the second goal is from dharma you get kama, and you get artha, economic development, wealth, satisfaction, money. And when you have those things, then you satisfy your senses. That's kama, sense enjoyment. Then when you're frustrated or fed up with sense enjoyment, you want higher happiness of liberation. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Lord Chaitanya said, no, there's the fifth goal beyond that, and that's love, prema. So the devotees aren't interested in moksha because they're striving for prema. They're not interested in bhogasukh or karmasukh. They want the bhakti-sukh, the happiness of devotion. Sukha means happiness, sukh. Bhakti-sukh, it's also sometimes called. It's like the jnanis and mayavadis, they merge into Brahman, and they enjoy a wonderful happiness. It's called brahmananda. But we enjoy premananda. Premananda is the bliss of lovingly serving Krishna for his pleasure. So this is the phrase bhakti takes one beyond moksha and offers prema, which is the highest end of bhakti. Prema pramartha mahan. This is the greatest goal of life. So in this these six characteristics of devotional service, there's a verse, this is the first wave in the first chapter, verse 17 in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which was translated in English by Srila Prabhupada. Klesh Agni Shubhada Moksha Lagutakrit Sudurlava Sandrananda Visheshatma Sri Krishna Karshani Cha. So in Sadhana Bhakti, the first two come from Sadhana Bhakti, Klesh Agni and Shubhada, means that Bhakti provides relief from material distress, which means Klesh, like we say, Adi Daivaka Klesh, Adi Bhautika Klesh, Adi Atmika Klesh. Nectar instruction, Srila Prabhupada discusses these afflictions, these difficulties. I think maybe remember. You remember? Adi Atmika. This means miseries caused by my body and mind. Backache, headache, migraine. It's called Atmika. Atma means body, mind, and soul. Adi Atmika Klesh. Klesh means difficulty, suffering, pain, problem. Then Adi Daivaka Klesh means suffering caused by nature, by the devas. It's too hot, it's too cold, it's too dry, it's too wet, right? It's cloudy, I got sunburned, or this or that. Then there's Adi Bhautika. Bhautika means Buddha. Buddha means living entity. So Adi Bhautika miseries, or Adi Bhautika Klesha, are miseries or difficulties caused by dogs when they bite us, or they bark at us, or they chase us down the street when we're going to Mangalarti. Or they got a stick. They walk around all the time with a stick. Like you see, you go on Prickle of Govardhan, you see 20 lakhs of people running around Govardhan, which is 2 million people. And no one's carrying a stick. Everyone's just walking in nicely. And then as you're walking, you come across some Western people. A guy is 6 feet 2. He's like 2.5 meters tall, and he's carrying a stick. And or you see some little ladies, Western ladies, walking around, they're carrying sticks. You know, percentage-wise, it's like really, you know, if you see 20 Western people, at least 2 of them are carrying a stick or the dogs. And you'll see 2 million Indians and nobody's carrying a stick. They're just walking around. And somehow they have more problem with Adi Atmika miseries than Western people. Western people have more problem with, Adi Bhautika miseries. They have some problem with Shani karma. Shani means Saturn. Saturn's the lord of Saturday, Saturn day. It used to be called Saturn day in Greece. It became Saturday. And Saturday is Shani in Hindi. But Shani is a great devotee. He worships actually Krishna. Different devas worship different personalities. But Shani, he's blue, dark blue in color. His own body is the same color as Krishna. And he worships Lord Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, not Vishnu and Narayana, but Krishna as his Ishtadeva. And the carrier of Shani is a dog. His Viman is a dog. Viman means carrier, like airplane. Brahma's carrier is a swan. Narayan's carrier is a Garuda. And Shiva's carrier is Nandi, the bull. And his son Kartikeya's carrier is a peacock. And his other son's carrier, Ganesh. Ganesh is carried on a rat, which is an interesting paradox. And that a rat carries an elephant. Very good. I could see an elephant carrying a rat, not a problem, but a rat carrying an elephant, this is a, it has an incredibly good suspension system. Very strong suspension system. If a rat can support an elephant, that's a very strong rat. And like this, and then we ride in a Honda car or a Toyota, and Krishna, his carrier is his feet. He walks on his feet, he doesn't ride on anything. He rides on the chariot of the gopis' minds, Gopi Manaratena. He sits on the chariot of the gopis' minds, and he sits on the chariot of his devotees' hearts, Bhati Rida Rat. He rides in the hearts of the devotees and the minds of the gopis. In this way, they have different carriers. So Shani Maharaj, his carrier is a dog. So if people have bad Shani karma, then usually dogs are giving a hard time. So one way to get free from having dogs give you a hard time is to worship Lord Shani, Lord of Saturday. And there's ways to do that, and people do it. But definitely one should not hit the dog, because the dog is, of course, if he's trying to bite your leg off, then you might have to defend yourself. So this verse is there, Klesha Agni Shubhada Moksha Lava Lagu Takrit Sadurava Sandrananda Visheshatma Sri Krishna Karshani Cha. So in this verse, Rupa Goswami has written this verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, verse 17, wave number 1. It's describing six characteristics of bhakti. Two of these characteristics are symptomatic of sadhana bhakti, two are characteristic or symptomatic of bhava bhakti, and two are systematic of prema bhakti. And prema bhakti includes all six, bhava bhakti includes four, and of course, sadhana bhakti includes two. And as we progress more in sadhana bhakti, then we become more and more, these qualities develop more and more fully. In sadhana bhakti, the first two qualities which we experience are Klesha Agni and Subhada. Klesha Agni means relief from distress or freedom from these miseries which I mentioned. And Subhada means the beginning of auspiciousness. Shubha. Shubha means auspiciousness. Shubham or Shobham or Shubha. Subhadra, we say Lady Subhadra. Subhadra is Krishna's sister, so she means very auspicious. Subhadra. So Shubhada. Shubhada means Shubhadan. It gives auspiciousness. So let us hear about those. Bhakti, or the practice of devotional service, provides relief from material distress, klesha, by destroying ills and afflictions. By practicing sadhana bhakti, one attains auspiciousness. In bhava bhakti, one experiences moksha lagutakrit. Moksha means liberation, and salvation. Lagutakrit means it's like the Asta cities, the yoga cities, yoga perfections, Anima city, Prapti city, Kamavayasita city, Mahima city, Lagu city. So Lagu means light or weak or small. It's like we have the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a nectarine discussion of the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the big discussion, the big nectar. Brihad means big, Brihad Madanga. Brihad means, so Sanatana Goswami wrote a very large commentary on the Bhagavatam called Brihad Bhagavatamrita, explaining the principles of bhakti and devotional development with different devotees in different planes of reality. Then his younger brother, Rupa Goswami, who was younger, he wrote also a commentary in Bhagavatam, or an analysis rather, on Bhagavatam. It's nothing but a commentary in Bhagavatam. This is kind of an analysis. His commentary is called Vaishnatoshini. On each verse of the Bhagavatam, it's nothing but a commentary. At any rate, he made a summary of two points on which devotee got the greatest mercy and which is the highest plane of reality. In the material firmament and spiritual firmament. So these two points were discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita very elaborately by taking these characters in the Bhagavatam and developing their personality and qualities to convey these two different concepts. Explain these two points. So Rupa Goswami, the younger brother of Sanatana Goswami, he wrote an analysis of Bhagavatam. It's called Lagu Bhagavatamrita. So Brihad Bhagavatamrita and Lagu. So Lagu means light, small, or something like that. It means light. So moksha lagutakrit means that when one is practicing bhava bhakti, when one comes to platform on bhava bhakti, then he thinks moksha becomes very light. He decries moksha. He thinks, oh, what is this liberation? Madanana janana sindaram kavitam bhava jagadishnu. Nama janmani janmani shri bhavata bhakti avitakidu. If I take birth after birth, it doesn't matter as long as I can have Bhagavad bhakti, the the devotion of Balaram Sri Krishna, I can serve him. It doesn't matter, even if I take another birth. So he's not hankering for liberation. Although a neophyte devotee on the path of bhakti, he may be very much inspired by the idea of, let me get out of here. This material world is no place for a gentleman. I want out. I've been suffering for so long and too much, and I don't want it anymore. It's all deja vu. It's all hackneyed and dry and stale. I've done it all a million times, and I don't want to go around again in the rat race. And I don't want to stay stuck up in the samsara. I want out. I want liberation. I want to go back home, back to Godhead. So we have some want. We have some desire. That's in the beginning of sadhana bhakti, bhakti sadhana. But as our consciousness becomes purified and our heart becomes filled with intense affection and love for Krishna, then our wants become practically nil. And then we simply want pure love for Krishna and service to the Lord. We're not even thinking anymore or desiring anymore for liberation, because we're already liberated by the virtue of absorption of Krishna's service. Jivan Mukta Suyuchate, this verse in Padma Prana explains that a devotee who is absorbed in Kalamana Sagira, his actions, his thinking and his words, Kalamana Sagira, his mind, his gira means his speech, and his actions are all absorbed in Iha Yasya Hareya Dasya. Hari Das, he's engaged in the service of Lord Hari, so he doesn't care. Hell or heaven, it doesn't matter to me, let me serve Krishna. Heaven, we say, heaven without devotees becomes hell, and hell with devotees becomes heaven. And if we're in heaven, but there's no devotees, it's like hell. But if we're in hell, and we're surrounded by devotees, and we can just talk about Krishna and chant Sankirtan, we'll be in heaven. In hell, we'll be transformed into heaven. And one time, a similar phrase I often repeat because I like it. It appeals to me. So then he asked his guru, what about this dream I had? He was in Vrindavan, he had the dream living here in Vrindavan. And his guru said, my dear Chela, you should understand that in Vrindavan, dreams are reality. And outside of Vrindavan, reality is a dream. So, in other words, when you're living in Moscow or Australia or New Zealand or America or Delhi or Bombay, you're living anywhere outside of Vajradham, that so-called reality, which we take very seriously, is a dream. It is illusion. It is temporary. It is meaningless, ultimately. That reality is a dream. But inside Vrindavan, when you're living in Vajmandal, Nandagam, Bharasthana, Sivakunj, Radhakun, Govardhan, when you're living here, whether you're dreaming, or whether you're awake or conscious, it is all reality. It is all real. Your dreams are real. Your daytime, your nighttime, your daydream, your nightdream, it is all reality. Really sweet, sweet phrase, sweet way of looking at things. May not always necessarily be true. And maybe in Vrindavan and dreaming the most Maya, biggest Maya you could imagine. That doesn't mean it's reality, it means it's Maya. Maya is also in Vrindavan. So much Maya is here. Maya is allowed to go anywhere. If ghosts can go through walls, what about Maya? Ghosts can go, because they're in subtle bodies, they can walk through the walls. So Maya is much more powerful. Maya Devi is more powerful than a million ghosts. She can go anywhere and everywhere. She can go through walls, the walls of your mind. Even ghosts can do that. But she can go in your heart and your mind, she can go anywhere. What does people move around grudge? So you have to be careful. So this Bhavabhakti, it derives even happiness and liberation. It devalues moksha as a desirable end. And siddhulabha, it is rarely achieved, that's for sure. But these are two qualities of Bhavabhakti. A person in bhava doesn't care anything about moksha, and to attain bhava is siddhulabha, it's very rarely attained. Of Prabhupada in the Mitra Devotion, he says, pure devotional service automatically puts one in the transcendental pleasure, for pure devotional service is rarely achieved. So this is Prabhupada's translation for the terms moksha labhutakrit and sudrulabha. He says, automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. So literally the verse says moksha labhutakrit, that the light that the Bhagavata, the devotee who attained Bhava, he thinks very lightly. He takes moksha very lightly. He doesn't take it seriously. He doesn't desire it. He doesn't want it. Because moksha provides a great degree of happiness and pleasure. But the devotee is experiencing such pleasure in his bhavas. And his bhava is an ecstatic absorption in Krishna's service and reciprocation with the Lord and divine love, or the dawning of divine love, pre-ankur, the bhava stage. He experiences such unlimited happiness that he doesn't care anything about the so-called happiness of Brahmananda or the happiness of Mokshananda, of liberation. So, he's automatically entranced in the pleasure. Then it's rarely achieved, and Prabhupada says it's rarely achieved. The last two characteristics of devotional service, of the six characteristics, are Chandrananda. Chandrananda Visheshatma, Sri Krishna Karshanicha. So this Chandrananda Visheshatma. So this Ananda, we know, means ultimate joy, bliss, happiness, incredible fulfillment. The most inconceivable level of happiness is called Ananda. Ananda, of course, is only in relation to the Atma and God. It is a divine experience. It is spiritual. In the material world, all the kind of indriya priti, indriya sukh, the happiness of sense enjoyment, seeing something nice, smelling something nice, tasting something nice, hearing something nice, touching something nice, thinking of something nice. This is all sukh. It's not Ananda. It is just happiness. We experience happiness, bodily happiness, physical happiness, pleasure. But then when we use the word Ananda, then we're not talking anymore about material pleasure or happiness. We're not talking anymore about indriya sukh, the happiness of the senses. Because the term Ananda applies only to the Atman, Satchit Ananda, Vigraha. So Chandra Ananda is not only Ananda, it's a type of spiritual joy or happiness springing from the soul in relation to God, but it's Chandra. Chandra, the word Chandra is a prefix. It means like we say, he's happy. Oh, he's very happy. We should say happy. Oh, he's happy. No, he's very, very. So very is an adverb, or it's an adverb. It's modifying this adjective, happiness. He's very happy. It's not just happy. Very happy. He's extremely happy. Totally happy. So the word Chandra means that, concentrated. Concentrated, actually in Sanskrit, it says highly concentrated and condensed to the point of impenetrability. Something is so concentrated, the molecules are so concentrated together, they become a solid wall of molecules. You can't penetrate, you can't get through it. So that's Chandra. So Chandrananda means his bliss, his joy. This is at the level of prema. One at the level of Krishna prema, his Ananda is called Chandrananda. So even a devotee in Bhava Bhakti experiences some Ananda. And we experience even at the level of sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana, Avaganuda sadhana, we experience also Ananda. It's called Kirtan Ananda. When we're in a good kirtan, we've been chanting 4 or 5 hours of Rathi Yatra, whatever, continuously chanting and dancing the holy name, Nitai Gauranga, Jai Sachinandan, Panchadatta Mantra, then after 3 or 4 hours you feel Ananda, you feel some bliss, no doubt. Prabhupada even commented, and Prabhupada's not lying. He said, you see my devotees, my boys and girls, these devotees, this is not artificial dancing. This is not ball dancing. See, their arms are raised, they're smiling, they're dancing. The soul is dancing. The soul is happy. The soul is experiencing joy in the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, Mahabhava's Kirtan. So the arms are raised, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. Hari Hari Bo, Hari Hari Bo. Dancing just like peacocks, homeward bound we go. Hari Hari Bo, Hari Hari Bo, chanting Krishna's holy names, homeward bound we go. Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Bo, Hari Bo. Jayananda Prabhu used to sing this little song in the Rathi Yatra time in San Francisco. We personally heard him sing it in 74, 5, 6. And then afterwards, living in Berkeley Temple, many devotees would sing Vatsala and others in times of ecstasy would sing this during kirtan. So this is a fact that Prabhupada commented on, that the devotees are feeling some ananda, even as at the level of Vaidhisadhana. But it's not Chandra. It's not Chandrananda. Highly concentrated to the point of impenetrable bliss. Totally concentrated. This is at the level of prema, where all the sattvic bhavas are being experienced, hair standing and tears pouring from the eyes like a fountain, and the throat choked up and quivering and goosebumps all over the body. The ananda becomes so condensed that it spreads throughout the heart like lightning flashes and causes transformations of the body and extreme ecstatic symptoms manifested therein. So this is Chandrananda. So that's at the level of Krishna prema. So this is one characteristic of bhakti on the high end. When you upgrade your ticket, when you go from business class to first class to, you know, clipper class, this is a prema bhakti class. It's Chandrananda Visheshatma. Not only Chandrananda, Visheshatma means a very special. Vishesh. The word Vishesh means special, distinctive. So it's a special type of a concentrated bliss, a distinctive type. Prema bhakti automatically imbibes one with transcendental pleasure. One acharya says that Chandrananda means the essence of the cream of delight of a special kind. So this one characteristic of Vaibhav Bhakti is Chandrananda Visheshatma. Vishesh means distinctive. Distinctive or special. A special kind of concentrated bliss. A unique kind of flavor. A special thrill. A thrill to life. And that one experiences on the platform of prema. And one acharya translates this term Chandrananda Visheshatma as the essence of the cream of delight of a special kind. And the second characteristic of prema is Sri Krishna Karshani. So Karshani, you've heard this word before, Sankarshan, and we're chanting all the time, or at least a few hours a day, we're trying to chant Hare Krishna. Krishna, the word Krish comes from Karshan. Karshan means to attract. Sankarshan, it means to completely attract, or total attraction. So Krishna, na means ananda, or na means to put an end to. And we say na, no, na means no, or to stop. So Krishna means to stop the attraction to maya. So Karshan means attraction. The attraction to maya is stopped by Krishna's name. It's one meaning of the name Krishna. We say Krishna. Krishna means, na means stop, Krishna means Karshan. Krishna means Karshan or attraction. Attraction to maya is stopped by attraction to Krishna. And Krishna means Krishna Ananda. Na means Ananda. So as one contacts Krishna's name and surrenders to Krishna and serves Krishna, he begins to experience an inner happiness and joy that ultimately expands and becomes transcendental bliss. This is the meaning of the word Krishna. One meaning. Ananda, bliss. So this Sri Krishna Karshani is the only means to attract the Lord. Is this prema. Krishna is attracted by prema. In fact, Krishna becomes controlled by prema. So these are the six characteristics that are being described here in this chapter one of Nectar Devotion. And that's the outline of the 6 points. And then Rupa Goswami explains in detail, with citing different shastric examples and verses, to explain the different aspects, these different characteristics, relief from material distress, kleshagni, and then shubhada, the beginning of auspiciousness, and then the siddhartha, it's very rare, moksha lagutakrit, Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. And like this, all these things are described. So in the beginning, when he talks about, and sadhana bhakti, as we mentioned, gives two things. It gives relief from distress, and it's the beginning of auspiciousness, klesha agni and shubhada. So in this beginning section, when it talks about relief from material distress, first we have to ask, well, what is the cause of material distress, which we mentioned? The cause of material distress is sins. So there's a long and elaborate discussion in the first two or three pages of this chapter one, Nectar Devotion, about sin, about the different stages of sin. So we've kind of summarized those in our notes. The first characteristic of devotional service is that it gives relief from distress. There are three causes of distress. One of the causes is papam, which is sin, and then bijam, which is material desire, and the third thing is avidya, ignorance, which is the root cause of this material desire. So in other words, there's ignorance, material desire, and sin. It goes in this progression. Avidya. Avidya means knowledge, and avidya means without knowledge. So avidya, ignorance, then one develops bijam, desire for sin or material desire, and then one engages in sin. So the root cause or the basis is, of course, avidya. Rupa Goswami explains and cites different Bhagavatam verses to show that only devotional service can remove all these three. That's why he says that it gives relief from all distress, because devotional service, the practice of bhakti, removes ignorance, it removes sin, papam, and it removes bijam, the desire for sin. In some practices of yoga, and gyan, they remove sin, because you stop sinning, you follow regular principles, yama niyama, you become brahmacharya when you practice yoga, you have to follow brahmacharya. And you always study philosophy, so you stay, you live a pure life. So you avoid sin, and you avoid, and you develop knowledge. You realize, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Atmatattva gyan, you study philosophy, you develop transcendental knowledge. But this bijam, the desire for sin, remains. And we see the examples of so many great yogis, their senses were totally controlled. They were not engaging in any sins, and they realized they were not the body. They were completely existing on a meditative platform of transcendental absorption. But still, deep in their heart, there were bijam, karma bijam, papa bijam, desire to sin. Bijam means desire, and papa means sin. So the example, the famous example, is Vishwamitra Muni. He was a great king, and he became a rishi. And he was meditating in Satyuga for 60,000 years, two-thirds of his life. 60% of his life he was absorbed in meditation. And Indra became a little bit worried that he may take over the heavenly planets and kick Indra out of his seat, out of his post. So then he sent Menaka, one of his high society girls, and she came by Vishwamitra Muni and jingled her ankle bells, and he heard those ankle bells and he said, "That sounds like the ankle bells of a woman. Must be a woman." Because in his heart he had desire for a woman. If he had no desire, then he would have no concern or no attraction. So he opened his eyes and said, "Yes, indeed, it is a woman, and a good-looking one at that." And so then he said, "The hell with this meditation. enough of this TM. Now it's time for a little, meditation." So then they gave birth to a child, a very beautiful child, famous child in Mahabharata, named Shakuntala. A very attractive person, a lady, the daughter of Vishwamitra Menaka. So Prabhupada cites this, and Rupa Goswami cites other verses, how this practice of yoga and jnana, although they are purifying and powerful, they cannot give relief from distress to the extent of bhakti. Because the cause of distress, which he mentioned, there's three causes of distress. Material suffering or problems or pain is caused by three causes. Avidya, ignorance, papam, sin, and the desire to sin. So jnana, karma, they can take away some of those causes of distress, but bhakti, which Brahma Samhita also tells, Lord Brahma tells, karmani, what is it? Nirdahati. Karmani nirdhati kintu chabakti bhajam. Karmani nirdhati kintu chabakti bhajam. By practicing bhakti bhajan, shravanam kirtan vishnu swanam arasevanam archanam vandanam sakyam apanam vedanam, by practicing the Navavada bhakti, the nine moons of bhakti, then karmani nirdhati kintu chabakti bhajam. That the karmic desires, the karma bhijam, they become nirdahati, means hanta, means they become destroyed. become eliminated. So this is the great blessing of bhakti, that why it gets relieved from material distress. This is a characteristic. This is a specific characteristic of bhakti, which you don't find in yoga, and you don't find in jnana, or what to speak of karma and mundane rituals and other forms of quasi-religious practices. Now, to get a little deeper into sin, I mean, the discussion of sin, because we said there's three causes of material distress. So there's kaman, vijjha, and then avidya. So now, in this fifth chapter of Nectar Devotion, there's a lot of discussion about kaman, what it all is, what sin is, and I'll give some summary of that from my notes. The sinful actions, kaman means kaman means sinful actions, it produces two types of reactions. One is called prarabdha, and one is called, which means manifest sinful reactions right now, and aparabdha, which means unmanifest. In terms of regression of these three aspects of distress, first there's avidya goes to bijam or material desire, and bijam goes to papam, sinful act, and then that goes to suffering, klesh. Because we say that bhakti gives relief from material distress, so that's called klesh agni. Klesh agni means relief from material distress. So take away the klesh. So how do we get that klesh? Well, out of ignorance. We're stupid. We do the wrong thing. We're stupid. So out of ignorance, because of ignorance, then we develop material desire. Ignorance means I think I'm the body. I'm a man. So that's ignorance. If I think I'm a man, that's ignorance. That's avidya. That's not, no, I'm atma. I'm Krishna's eternal servant. That's it, boss. Not anything. I'm a servant. I'm to be enjoyed by Krishna, and everything belongs to him. Nothing belongs to me. As soon as I think I am the enjoyer, I am the purusha, I am man, and there is something beyond, outside of me I can enjoy. I can enjoy this woman, for example. So that's ignorance. So it begins with ignorance, avidya, and then we think, because I think I'm a man, and I think she's woman, I don't think she's a gopi, she's Krishna's energy, she belongs to Krishna, she's engaged in Krishna's service. I think, because of ignorance, I think, oh, she's a beautiful woman, and my sex appetite is aroused, and so I develop material desire, it's called bijam, oh, I want to enjoy with her, right, bijam, then we, hey, baby, don't I know you from somewhere? Yeah, I went. You went to school in Moscow? Yeah, I went to school. Me too. I went to that art school. You did too? Oh yeah, I think I saw you. This and that, this and that. Then papam, sinful action. Then what is the result of sinful action? Klesha, suffering. Emotional suffering. Oh, my baby, she left me. My baby, she left me. Doom, 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 doom. I'm all by myself. Doom, 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 doom. My baby, she left me. I'm all by myself. Doo, doo, doo. So that's called the blues, right? So it's avidya, bijam, papam, klesh. Klesh means suffering, emotional suffering, mental suffering. What to speak about? VB, AIDS. See that pretty girl? You're in Thailand at Papaya. What is it? Papaya Beach or Pattaya Beach or some famous beach? Papaya. There's some beach over there. I've never been there, but someone told me about it. Some famous place called Pattaya Beach in Thailand, and there are all these beautiful, so-called beautiful prostitutes there, just do what they do. So then someone goes there, and then they say, oh, beautiful girl, then that's ignorance, and then they get in papam, and then bijam, and then papam, and then they enjoy with that person, they commit sin, then they go back to America, and they say, uh-oh, that girl had AIDS. So then it's klesha, you get AIDS, and then you die 2 years later. So, how do we know? Easy come, easy go. So this is the progression. So this papam, we're discussing the first cause of material distress. There's papam, there's sin, there's avidya, ignorance, and then there's the bijam, the desire to sin. So this papam, sinful activity, produces two types of reactions. Aparabdha, which is unmanifest, and prarabdha, which is manifest. So prarabdha papam and aparabdha papam. Prarabdha papam means manifest sinful reactions. Just as a disease is caught early, an early stage, it's easily curable. It's difficult to cure once it's allowed to become chronic. So sinful reactions are difficult to eradicate once they're manifest. In other words, from previous life, we engage in sin, and then we got reaction, which is manifest in this life. We may not, we may have, say we, you know, we told some, you know, we told some lies in the last life, or we lied to some great rishi or something, and he cursed us, and we got a sinful reaction. He said, "I curse you, you'll stutter in your next life." If you can look up in the Garuda Purana and other books, they tell you, if you see this, if you see this manifest in someone's body, that means they did this sin in their previous life. So if someone stutters, they say, well, I think I, you know, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. They can't speak clearly. It's called stuttering. That's a reaction of a sinful activity. They spoke badly about a saintly person in their last life. Well, there's all different kinds of things like this that are told. So that's manifest. They took birth and they got reacted. That's called prarabdha. That sin is manifest. So once a disease, that's the analogy it's told here, once a disease is already allowed to become chronic, fully developed, it's very difficult to reverse. So, however, devotional service, bhakti, can remove even manifest sinful reactions and suffering that they bring. And it says, our birth is a tangible result of prarabdha papam, or of karma. So we're born in a particular family due to our previous karma. So if we were very sinful in our previous life, then we'll be born in a sinful family this life. We'll be eating meat in the womb, and we'll be, you know, and that's a result of sin. That's prarabdha, that's manifest sinful reactions. If we were very pious in our last life, then in this life we'll be born a vegetarian family, a Vaishnava family, a Brahmin family. So this is manifest. So that's prarabdha. That's like a chronic disease. It's already going on. You can't change that we were born in a rakshasa family, meat-eating family, and drinking whiskey and smoking cigarettes and so many bad things we brought up with. That's papa karma. That's called prarabdha papam, reactions from previous sins. However, that can change. That can change. How can it change? If you practice bhakti, take a devotional service, then you can become a Brahmin by the process of diksha. So this is obvious prarabdha, a tangible result of our papam. Our prarabdha papam is our body. And aprarabdha papam means unmanifested sinful reactions. Prabhupada says in this part of the Nectar Devotion, he says, a devotional service is like a blazing fire which burns up limitless amounts of unmanifested sinful reactions. So then the question is asked, how do unmanifested reactions cause suffering? In other words, aprarabdha papam, it's unmanifest. So how does it cause patient suffering? So it explains like this. A sinful action generates two types of unmanifested reactions. One type creates direct physical or emotional suffering, which I already mentioned. The other type creates indirect suffering by increasing our sinful propensities. Example, here's an example. If we engage in illicit sex, we get two types of reactions. One is manifest, which is prarabdha, and one is unmanifest, which is called aprarabdha. So we engage in illicit sex, we get two types of reactions. One type creates some direct physical or emotional suffering. That's direct, it's manifest. That's called prarabdha. The other type creates indirect suffering by increasing our proclivity, which means our inclination, for sex, thereby increasing sexual desires, impelling future illicit, impelling us or forcing us to engage in the future in illicit sex, entangling us in a karmic cycle of suffering. So it's like this. You know, we engage in illicit sex, and then that, we may get VD, we may get AIDS, that's directly manifest reaction, prarabdha, or we may get brokenhearted, our lover leaves us, or she dies untimely, and then we suffer so much emotional lamentation and heartbreak. That's prarabdha. Then that sinful action of illicit sex also creates aprarabdha, which is unmanifested now, But it creates a proclivity or inclination. Well, I engage in sex, maybe I should do it again. That was pretty good. I had a good time. And so we start, that creates some reaction, like, you know, not immediately. It's not immediately manifest, but it creates proclivity. Then we start thinking, then we develop a that proclivity or inclination towards or leaning towards. Then we start thinking more about it. Then that thinking creates a bija, a desire for sin. And then that desire to sin becomes papam. And then we've been raising papam, sin. Again, you know, it's like a cycle like this. This is how it works. So the apavada reaction to sin creates indirect suffering by increasing our proclivity for sex, thereby increasing our sexual desires, which is bijam, which impels us or pushes us to future illicit sex, which is papam, and tangles us in the karmic cycle of suffering. When sinful desires increase, sinful activities increase. When sinful activity increases, sinful desires increase. It goes like this. It's an endless cycle. So this is the karma. The karma is endlessly attached in this way. We increase our sinful desires, then our sinful activities. We keep thinking sin, then eventually commit sin. And when we engage in sinful activities, that creates a desire to sin again. It is a self-perpetuating cycle. The more we try to satisfy our desires, the stronger they become. Now, what to do? How to get out of this cycle? To break the cycle of bondage, we must tolerate sinful desires and not act to fulfill them. When these desires are not being reinforced by unmanifest reactions, by this aparabdha, they will gradually leave our heart forever. Krishna explains this principle in the Bhagavad Gita 7.28. Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvamoha nirmukta ajanti mam divavataha. To make significant advancement, we must engage in Krishna consciousness with unwavering determination. This is difficult when a stock of unmanifested reactions, which is aparabdha, continuously generates sinful desires that distract us from bhakti. But by acting piously, means controlling our senses and Krishna consciousness, however, we avoid sinful activities and we don't increase our sinful proclivities or inclination. This gradually exhausts our stock of sins, allowing us to engage in devotional service without distraction. Vrita Vrata. So tomorrow, we'll stop here. Then tomorrow we'll discuss this verse.
I mean, this is Lord Chaitanya has explained this mood and that Shikshastakam, Nadana Najanam, and this particular verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas, they say that this verse displays ruchi. That nishtha, when one is at the platform of offering respect to others, not expecting respect, and extremely tolerant, like a tree, and ready to offer obeisance to everyone. He's very humble and thinks of himself like lower than a blade of grass. That's called nishtha. That's when he's steady in bhakti, which is not an easy thing. And then when one actually gets a taste in Krishna consciousness, a taste for serving Krishna, then he loses his taste for everything else. He loses his taste for woman, which is pretty significant because most men have a strong taste for woman. He loses his taste for woman and profit, adoration, distinction, and all their material allurements and forms of sense enjoyment, nadana, najanana, sindhiram. And he's so much getting a taste from serving Krishna that he doesn't want anything of this world. As I mentioned, he has no taste or attraction to anything of this world or anything in heavenly planets or even going to the spiritual world. He just wants to serve Krishna. So it's a particular mood. Lord Chaitanya is explaining there, which exemplifies the quality of ruchi. Adoshara tata sarasanga vajra nakriya narta nivriti tata nishta ruchi asakti bhava prema. These are the nine steps of gradual evolution from shraddha or faith to pure love of God, prema. So ruchi is one step on the way. So, you know, it doesn't mean that a devotee who's engaged in devotional service, he's not thinking of a particular, at a certain point, even at the beginning, actually, at ruchi, at the platform of ruchi, one gets a taste and begins to have some slight inclination, especially at ruchi and the border of asakti, he becomes attached in a particular way. But even at ruchi, he starts to manifest within his heart how he wants to serve Krishna, and what particular bhava or stai bhava, madhurya ras, madhura rati, vatsalya rati, or sakya rati. And so, although he may be in the material world, he still is going to practice raganuga sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, and he's still going to meditate on Madhya Shoda if he's in Vatsalya Bhav, and her moods and meditations and her type of feelings and services towards Krishna, and try to emulate and follow in her footsteps, and aspire and pray for the day of rendering similar services to Krishna at the time of perfection. So this is a meditative practice that it goes on now as a sadhaka, and even when one is a siddha in this world. So that's going on, whether one is in this world or that world. In that world, one directly engages in Krishna's service in his Vastu city, pure spiritual body, in a particular sthayi bhava, which has been realized and fully developed as a sadhaka in the material world. But it doesn't mean that a devotee never thinks, oh, I really don't want to go back to Godhead. I don't want to serve Krishna as his mother in Vatsalya Ras or any Ras. I just want to stay here and distribute books forever. His Prabhupada never taught us like that. He said we should try to get out of this world. We should desire to go back home, back to Godhead. I mean, this is the motto of the BTG, Krishna Surya Samamaya Hai Andhakara, that Krishna is just like the sunshine, that Krishna consciousness is a brilliant sun world, brilliant world of effulgent love and prema, and this world is a darkness, and we should try to go to that world, back home, back to Godhead. I mean, doesn't mean, Prabhupada didn't say, stay here, back to Godhead. Stay in this world, don't go anywhere. Just stay here, life after life. No, he said, go back. It means get out of this world. Go back home. Home means, home is the plane of the heart. Home is a comfortable place. Home comfort, as Sridhar Swami used to say, home comfort. So we feel comfortable when we're home. So engaged in Krishna's service, the soul finds a comfortable place. It's a natural place to be lovingly engaged in Krishna's service. This is natural, and to be stuck in this material body in this limited world of birth and death is unnatural. It's a foreign place. So we do aspire in our heart of hearts to enter the spiritual world and serve Krishna eternally in Prem Dham, Sri Vrindavan Dham. But at the same time, what Lord Chaitanya is showing in Shikshastakam is that bhakti is so wonderful and the bhakti rasa is so flavorful that I'm serving Krishna in a particular rasa, in Vatsali rasa, Madhurya rasa, or Sakya rasa. So, Chandrananda Visheshatma, right? Chandrananda Visheshatma. This is a symptom of prema, that one who's in that prema, he's feeling highly concentrated, condensed, highly concentrated to the point of impenetrability, bliss. It's so much bliss that he doesn't care if I'm liberated or not liberated, whether I go to the spiritual world or I stay, or it doesn't matter. I'm relishing, I'm diving and servicing in the waves of the ocean of bliss, the Bhakti Rasamrita, Sindhu, the ocean, the nectarine ocean of Bhakti Ras. Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Abdilahari Kalula Magna Mahur Vande Rupasnatana Ruvio Ruguyago Srijiva Gopalayo Gopi Bhava Rasamritabdi. They were diving and surfacing in the oceans of Gopi, ocean waves, the Bhava Taranga, the Prema Taranga of Gopi Bhav. They're in this world. They're in their bodies as Rupa and Rati, I mean Rupa and Raghunath Das. So what do they care? Who was the prime minister? Who was the president? The rising and falling of empires, the birth and death of the body. What do they care? They didn't know about day or night. Ahara Nidra Maitun, what was it? Nidra Hara Vihara Kadivichato. They had conquered over eating and sleeping, so birth or rebirth in this world, it doesn't matter. I'm swimming in an ocean of nectar. Whether I'm in the spiritual world in that ocean of nectar, or whether I'm in this world, the ocean of nectar is the same. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the same, here and there. So this is the meaning of that verse. we should desire to attain Krishna Prem, realize our eternal serving relationship with Krishna, one of the five rasas, and hanker to engage in that service in our internally conceived mental spiritual body, Anattas Chintadeha, at the platform of Bhava Bhakti. And then we're absorbed in that meditation, doing that service. And while we're here, we're doing that service, and we're there, we're doing that service in our Siddhadeha. Here we're doing it in our Manasadeha, our mental body. There we're doing it in our spiritual body. Because our physical bodies here in this world are not suited to serve Krishna. They're all full of stool and contamination. They're not Shuddha-sattvic bodies. They're not spiritual bodies. It's not our Siddhadeha. So we meditate and we pray for that time. But it's healthy. We should have a healthy desire to enter the spiritual world, to be in Vrindavan, serving Radha and Krishna, our Guru Varg, and our pure spiritual bodies. We should desire to attain perfection. Our practice of bhakti should be done with attachment, and our practice of bhakti should be done with a desire to attain Krishna Prem. Prem Seva, Radha and Krishna, and Goloka Vrindavan. This is our desire. Following the footsteps of the Braja Gopis, entering that Nitya Vrindavan to eternally serve the Lord. You see the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gita Mala. He has called Siddhi Lalasa. And we have some in our songbook, we have Siddhi Lalasa. It means Lalasa means hankering for some perfectional stage, right? Siddhi Lalasa. I forget which song it is in our songbook. Maybe Radha Krishna, Pranamore, Yugala Kishore. We're hankering for that perfection, to be there in the spiritual world, to be serving them in our spiritual body, Vastu Siddhi, in a particular rati, Madhura rati, Vatsali rati, Sakya rati. Not that we say, oh, I just want to stay in Moscow forever. I want to stay in Moscow, Bertha. I want to stay in Kiwi land or New Zealand, birth after birth, chanting Hare Krishna, selling Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada never told us that. Yes, all my disciples should desire to stay here eternally and sell my books. I never read anywhere like that. I never read anywhere. He says, you should go back home, back to Godhead. Why are you staying in this world? Don't make me come back again. Well, Prabhupada, if the disciple doesn't attain perfection, will the spiritual master, we read that the spiritual master will come back and liberate him. Is that true? And Prabhupada answers, don't make your spiritual master come back. You nonsense. Don't be nonsense. Act in such a way that you get out in this lifetime. In this very life, you should go back home, back to God. And in fact, I personally sat in a class in Los Angeles in 1965 in New York, and Prabhupada came, he gave class, he was there many days in 76. And he said, and there were about 400 devotees in the temple room. He said, I am so grateful that everyone here is taking part in the book distribution, distributing my books, that Rameshwar Swami has engaged everyone. And on Saturday, even all the ladies and housewives, I've heard that the young married ladies, they go out with their baby cradles, their little carts where you carry the baby, the little four-wheeled cart. They go out with their baby carts, and they put the baby on the side of the cart, and next to the baby they pile up my Bhagavatams in the baby cart. And they push their baby, you know, and then next to the baby is 20 Bhagavatams. And then they use the baby cart and they take care of their babies and they sell my books at the same time. I saw my own eyes. It's quite that's how much, you know, they were attached to pleasing Prabhupada. They're walking around the sidewalks, it's called stroller, right? It's called a baby stroller, I think. Baby cart, it's called a stroller. Different countries they call it different things. America they call it stroller. Anyways, a little four-wheel cart, the baby inside, a little hood on it. It's got a little hood on it to keep out the sun, right? It's all padded. Little portable bed on wheels, and the mother's pushing the baby around, even has a little fly net, little net over it to keep the flies out, mosquito net type thing. So inside there's not only the baby, but there's Krishna there in the form of the Bhagavatam, and they're selling 20 Bhagavatams and taking care of Junior at the same time. So Prabhupada commented on this. He said, so everyone here, I see the ladies, the gents, everyone's taking part in this book distribution. I'm very pleased with this. And then Prabhupada said, If you continue dedicating your life to preaching Lord Chaitanya's movement and distributing my books, I guarantee, that you can hear on the tape also, he says, I guarantee, then he hits his hand on the podium. He goes, boom, I guarantee that in this life you'll go back home, back to Godhead. And everybody says, then they have all these mridangas go, boom, 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 jai Prabhupada, Prabhupada ki, jai, boom, 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 You know, I was really ecstatic in those days, you know. So Prabhupada didn't say, I guarantee you, you should all stay in Los Angeles life after life, generally, distributing my books in your baby strollers. He said, no, you go back home, back to Godhead. Godhead is, you know, they even sang a song, that changing hearts at Mangalananda. It's going back to Godhead, going back to home, going back to Godhead. Going back to home, do, you know, like that. Some kind of rock and roll Hare Krishna. It's called Change of Heart. Record album. Came out in 1976, and they gave it to Prabhupada and had all the lyrics on it. And there's one song on that album called Going Back to Godhead. And there's another song called You're Not the Body. You know you're not the body, do. The body's just a lump of matter, destined to grow old, and die. We used to play it in a cassette, you know, the devotees in the Sangratan van. We're going out to, we would sell that record, we'd sell the record and give a Bhagavad Gita, we'd eat a book with it too. It was quite a funny thing. And on the back of the album it said dedicated to George Harrison or something like that, some writing. So we go up to someone, we say, sir, excuse me, do you know George Harrison? Oh yeah, you like him? Yeah, oh here, look at this. And we point to the back and say dedicated to George Harrison. And he said, you know, you like George Harrison, right? Well, this is like George Harrison. He goes, oh, this is George Harrison. I said, yeah, I like that. It was actually just the devotees singing these Hare Krishna tunes, right? You're Not the Body and Going Back to Godhead and Mr. Blue Boy or something was about Krishna or whatever. So they played it for Prabhupada and said, oh, Prabhupada said, oh, this is nice. It's, you know, they're trying to be Krishna conscious. You know you're not the body. The body's just a lump of matter destined to grow old. Destined to grow and die. Anyway, such a, all the guitars go, you know, it's a rock and roll thing. So this change of heart. So Prabhupada definitely, you know, he wanted us to set our sights to the spiritual world and meditate on Vrindavan. He said, as Krishna is worshipful, his land is worshipful, Ramya, Kachit, Brajavadubir, that verse Lord Chaitanya spoke, that the land of that Srimad Bhagavatam is our praman, that the Brijvasis and Vrindavan, Brajadam are worshipable places and people, and that bhakti and the mood of the gopis, Gopi Bhav, is the goal of life. So we should strive for that and try to attain perfection, absorbing ourselves and meditating on Nanda Yashoda or Subhan Sridham or Lita Vishaka Rupa Rati Manjari, and develop our bhava and love for Krishna in a particular mood of and mellow of love, and prepare ourselves to enter the land of love and eternally serve the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in pure love and devotion.
Because Krishna, but this is, I want
to go to spiritual world. No, that's like salvation. Because, well, that's in Gita. Krishna says in the 7th chapter about the 4 kinds of pious men, Chaturvedha Vachanimam, Jana Sukriti Narjana, Artavaratati Jignasu, Gyanicha Bharatashiva. He said, 4 kinds of pious men worship me, like Dhruva Maharaj, Gajendra, the 4 Kumaras, etc. So there are examples. Dhruva was he wanted wealth. Arta, some want wealth, some are in distress. Gajendra was in distress. Gajendra, the elephant, was in distress, so he prayed to Krishna. The alligator was biting his leg off, threatening to kill him. So Gajendra is the example of someone in distress. Dhruva is in desire of wealth. And the 4 Kumaras are wise men. And the sages of Naimisharanya, they were wise men, and the 4 Kumaras, they were seeking knowledge like that. So there's 4 kinds of men. So whatever your approach is, it's okay, and you'll become purified. Ultimately, the pure mood is, as we said, bhakti for bhakti's sake. I just want to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. That's what Lord Chaitanya is trying to show, that. He's trying to show ruchi. Ruchi has certain qualities. Ruchi, or taste for serving Krishna, means that you've lost all taste for you've lost all selfishness. To get this ruchi after being steady in bhakti, that steadiness purifies the heart of all ulterior motives and ulterior desires, selfish desires. That's what nishtha is all about. That's what this Trinada Pisa Nichayana is all about. So then you come to this platform of ruchi, and in platform of ruchi, then you feel that way. That I don't want anything. I don't want it. That's when you actually have Krishna Ruchi. You've attained Nam Ruchi. You've actually attained taste for the holy name. when you have so much taste for serving Krishna that you lose all taste for serving yourself. You lose all taste for selfish desires, liberation, freedom or distress. I don't care. Mother Kunti, she had so much ruchi, so much taste in serving Krishna. She said, "Oh Krishna, I'm suffering. My family is broken and there's so much suffering coming this way. My children are lost, this, that. Our house is burned down. We're stuck here in the forest. Anyway, I lost my husband." She said, "Oh, let all this suffering continue to come upon me again and again, because when I'm suffering, my consciousness runs to your lotus feet like the Ganges running to the ocean. So better I'm suffering because I remember you more." So even she prays, rather than praying for relief from suffering, she's praying for, "Give me more suffering, because then I'll be more Krishna conscious." So this is ruchi. It's a high taste of ruchi. It's more like bhava. Mother Kunti is in a very high developed state of consciousness. So start somewhere worshipping Krishna with mixed motive and mixed desire. And eventually by contacting Krishna, worshipping Krishna and bhakti, then that purifies our desires and our ambitions. So we get to the point of real ruchi, where we're like, we can be like Lord Chaitanya. "Okay, I don't care. I used to worship Krishna. I approached Krishna because I wanted salvation. I wanted to go anywhere. I don't know, back home, back to God in any head, any place. Let me out of here. Just get me out of this world. I don't know, Krishna, take me in any world but this world. I want out. I've had enough. I've too much frustration, too much suffering, setbacks, broken hearts, and crazy activities. I don't want this world. Krishna, take me out of here. If I can chant Hare Krishna and serve you and get that, get out of here, then great. Let's go." So that's the beginning. That's not pure devotional service. That's mixed. That's mixed with karma. So gradually, by contacting Krishna, His holy name, and being guided properly by Guru, one will execute sadhana bhakti in the correct way and develop a pure mentality and pure desire.